two main areas where outcomes have seriously worsened are injustice and mental health. And alarmingly so, the national Indigenous imprisonment rate has increased over 77% in the last 15 years. So that's 13 times the rate for non-Indigenous adults. Looking at that more broadly, looking at juvenile detention, so while there's been no increase in the rate of juvenile detention in Australia, it still does remain very high at 24 times the rate of juvenile detention for non-Indigenous Australians.
That's one area of real concern. But there's also another area, hospitalizations and self-harm, because every now and then we hear in the news about people taking their lives, and the worst case I've heard about is a 9-year-old committing suicide, and there hasn't been any much improvement in that area.
No, there's right. You're right, Bertram. There's been no improvement, and we also know that there's no simple answers. So Overcoming Indigenous Disadvantage report highlights that suicide rates of Indigenous Australians still remains twice the rate for non-Indigenous Australians. But importantly and concerningly, hospitalisation for self-harm has increased by 56% over the past decade. We know it's not a simple area to deal with. You're dealing with very complex risk and protective factors. But one of the interesting things is, and it's probably a common theme through this year's Overcoming Indigenous Disadvantage report, and indeed it was found in two recent reviews of research on suicide prevention programs for Indigenous peoples. These reviews also found that there was really a pressing need for more robust and transparent program evaluations to identify what works best and in what context. And I think that that's one of the key takeouts of Overcoming Indigenous Disadvantage report. And remember, Bertrand, this is a report that's effectively prepared by a steering committee that represents all Australian governments, so the Commonwealth government, the states and territories, so people that are very closer to the coalface of Indigenous policy within government. So this is their report card that we help them prepare. So this year what we've been focusing on is also trying to find case studies of what works and why. And in finding those case studies, we have to find examples of policies and programs where there have been those robust evaluations. And what was really concerning to us is that you step back for a moment and you think, well, we know that there's about $30 billion spent on improving the wellbeing of Indigenous Australians, and that's both programs specifically targeted to Indigenous Australians and mainstream expenditure. And we know from other researchers that there's over 1,000 specific projects or programs targeted at Indigenous Australians. When you look at that over 1,000, we could only find 34 case studies, so 34 programs or policies where they had been evaluated. And even of that 34, only 24 of them showed, like, cleared our threshold of what would be a sound evaluation, but also where there'd been sustained improvements over time. So of the 34, 24 are showing sustained improvements in outcomes, and 10 we kind of identified as promising.
I'll just ask you to say that again. It's 34 out of how many?
So we know that in Australia, from other researchers, there's over 1,000.
Only 34 have been properly evaluated
that we could find. And remember, I mean, our team actually did quite a bit of an archaeological dig here to try to find these program evaluations. And indeed, we've got a steering committee that's all the states and territories and the Commonwealth government. We've got a working group, including involved in Indigenous Australians, that supports the steering committee. So we've searched high and low, and we could only find 34 that sort of met our reasonable criteria of an independent evaluation.
There might be a lot of wastage of funds and resources, because you talk about very large amounts being spent and only 34 proper evaluations with...
And Bertrand, that's exactly right. So from our perspective, we can't be surprised if we're not making improvement across all of the indicators of Indigenous well-being, if we're not lifting the bonnet on these policies and programs to test them. You know, are they working, are they not, and why not? And it's not a matter of just shortchanging Australian taxpayers given the $30 billion. I guess from our perspective, it's about the well-being of Indigenous Australians, and are we really shortchanging Indigenous Australians by not doing those evaluations? The report does want to highlight the positives and highlight the strengths, so we've gone to great lengths to profile the 34 case studies. There are some that, you know, that I thought might be of interest to you that touch on health, education and employment. Of the 34, a couple that were national and subject to independent evaluation would be Australian Indigenous Mentoring Experience, which is all about making sure that kids finish year 12. There's Working on Country, which really supports the aspirations to care for country through employment and training opportunities, and also to work in areas where there's natural resource management. Another one that's really important, because we know that there was good progress in childhood development, is the Care for Kids Ears program, which has increased an awareness of ear disease and really pointing to the importance of seeking and following treatment to prevent hearing loss, because it's not just the loss of hearing that matters. We know that loss of hearing can really hold back a child from learning well at school. And we know that education and employment are probably the two most important areas for overcoming Indigenous disadvantage on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, maybe those are case studies to be actually advertised and well shown to everyone else to follow their example, because these seem to be working very well.
Exactly, and that's why it's important that when the programs and policies are evaluated, it's really important that they're evaluated robustly, but also that they're made available, that they're public, because then people in Western Australia can learn from the experiences of good policies and programs in Queensland, or where there's insights on what's not working from another state or territory, everyone can benefit from that. I guess the other important thing, though, is that in our Overcoming Indigenous Disadvantage report, which, as you've rightly pointed out, is very comprehensive, what really informs that comprehensive coverage is a strategic framework that links the indicators. For example, we know that a good example would be, say, take overcrowding in housing. We know from our work and analysis that that also affects education, health and justice outcomes if Indigenous Australians are experiencing overcrowding housing. And we know that if you don't have good education and health outcomes, then that also then contributes to problems with, you know, literacy and chronic disease and family violence. So the report's not just about providing a report card on a whole bunch of indicators and metrics. It's trying to connect the dots between what levers we need to pull to make sure that across all the bases of wellbeing for Indigenous Australians that we're making improvement. We'd really encourage on our website, it is a very, the big report itself is very long, but there is a very short overview. We've got some fact sheets. We've also got a video that has been prepared by NITV to advertise directly to Indigenous Australians why this report is important and how it relates to them. I guess indeed we sort of see this at least the overview, to be compulsory reading for anyone who's interested in Indigenous outcomes and Indigenous wellbeing.